Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We're up to chapter 21, and I'm not going to waste any time today, I'm going to dive right in. Alright, here we go, book 1, chapter 21 of Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace. While in the Rostov's ballroom, the Six Anglais was being danced, to a tune in which the weary musicians blundered, and while tired footmen and cooks were getting the supper, Count Bezukhov had a sixth stroke. The doctors pronounced recovery impossible. After a mute confession, communion was administered to the dying man, preparations made for the sacrament of unction, and in his house there was the bustle and thrill of suspense usual at such moments. Outside the house, beyond the gates, a group of undertakers who hid whenever a carriage drove up waited in expectation of an important order for an expensive funeral. The military governor of Moscow, who had been assiduous in sending aides-de-camp to inquire after the count's health, came himself that evening to bid a last farewell to the celebrated grandee of Catherine's court, Count Bezukhov. The magnificent reception room was crowded. Everyone stood up respectfully when the military governor, having stayed about half an hour alone with the dying man, passed out, slightly acknowledging their bows and trying to escape as quickly as possible from the glances fixed on him by the doctors, clergy, and relatives of the family. Prince Vasily, who had grown thinner and paler during the last few days, escorted him to the door, repeating something to him several times in low tones. When the military governor had gone, Prince Vasily sat down all alone on a chair in the ballroom, crossing one leg high over the other, leaning his elbow on his knee, and covering his face with his hand. After sitting so for a while, he rose and, looking about him with frightened eyes, went with unusually hurried steps down the long corridor leading to the back of the house, to the room of the eldest princess. Those who were in the dimly lit reception room spoke in nervous whispers, and whenever anyone went into or came from the dying man's room, grew silent and gazed with eyes full of curiosity or expectancy at his door, which creaked slightly when opened. "The limits of human life are fixed and may not be overpassed," said an old priest to a lady who had taken a seat beside him and was listening naively to his words. "I wonder, is it not too late to administer unction?" asked the lady, adding the priest's clerical title, as if she had no opinion of her own on the subject. "Ah, madame, it is a great sacrament," replied the priest, passing his hand over the thin, grizzled strands of hair combed back across his bald head. "Who was that? The military governor himself?" was being asked at the other side of the room. "How young-looking he is." "Yes, and he is over 60. I hear the count no longer recognizes anyone. They wish to administer the sacrament of unction. I knew someone who received that sacrament 7 times. The second princess had just come from the sick room with her eyes red from weeping and sat down beside Dr. Lorraine, who was sitting in a graceful pose under a portrait of Catherine, leaning her elbow on the table. "Beautiful," said the doctor, in answer to a remark about the weather. "The weather is beautiful, princess, and besides, in Moscow one feels as if one were in the country." "Yes, indeed," replied the princess with a sigh. "So he may have something to drink?" Lorraine considered. "Has he taken his medicine?"
"Yes."
The doctor glanced at his watch. "Take a glass of boiled water and put a pinch of cream of tartar," and he indicated with his delicate fingers what he meant by a pinch.
"There has never been a case,"
a German doctor was saying to an aide-de-camp,
"that one lifts after the third stroke."
"And what a well-preserved man he was," remarked the aide-de-camp.
"And who will inherit his wealth?" he added in a whisper.
"It won't go begging," replied the German with a smile.
Everyone again looked towards the door, which creaked as the second princess went in with the drink she had prepared according to Lorraine's instructions. The German doctor went up to Lorraine.
"Do you think he can last till morning?" asked the German, addressing Lorraine in French, which he pronounced badly. Lorraine, pursing up his lips, waved a severely negative finger before his nose. "Tonight, not later," said he in a low voice, and he moved away with a decorous smile of self-satisfaction at being able clearly to understand and state the patient's condition. Meanwhile, Prince Vasily had opened the door into the princess's room. In this room it was almost dark, only two tiny lamps were burning before the icons, and there was a pleasant scent of flowers and burnt pastilles. The room was crowded with small pieces of furniture, whatnots, cupboards, and little tables. The quilt of a high, white feather bed was just visible behind a screen. A small dog began to bark. "Ah, is it you, cousin?" She rose and smoothed her hair, which was, as usual, so extremely smooth that it seemed to be made of one piece with her head and covered with varnish. "Has anything happened?" she asked. "I am so terrified." "No, there is no change. I only came to have a talk about business, Katish," muttered the prince, seating himself wearily on the chair she had just vacated. "You have made the place warm, I must say," he remarked. "Well, sit down, let's have a talk." "I thought perhaps something had happened," she said with her unchanging, stonily severe expression, and sitting down opposite the prince, she prepared to listen. "I wished to get a nap, mon cousin, but I can't." "Well, my dear," said Prince Vasily, taking her hand and bending it downward, as was his habit. It was plain that this "well" referred to much that they both understood without naming. The princess, who had a straight, rigid body, abnormally long for her legs, looked directly at Prince Vasily with no sign of emotion in her prominent grey eyes. Then she shook her head and glanced up at the icons with a sigh. This might have been as an expression of sorrow or devotion, or of weariness and hope of resting before long. Prince Vasily understood it as an expression of weariness. "And I," he said, "do you think it is easier for me? I am as worn out as a post-horse, but still I must have a talk with you, Katish, a very serious talk." Prince Vasily said no more, and his cheeks began to twitch nervously, now on one side, now on the other, giving his face an unpleasant expression which was never to be seen on it in a drawing room. His eyes, too, seemed strange. At one moment they looked impudently sly, and at the next glanced around in alarm. The princess, holding her little dog on her lap with her thin, bony hands, looked attentively into Prince Vasily's eyes, evidently resolved not to be the first to break silence, if she had to wait till morning. "Well, you see, my dear princess and cousin, Catherine Semenova," continued Prince Vasily, returning to his theme, apparently not without an inner struggle, "at such a moment as this, one must think of everything. One must think of the future, of all of you. I love you all, like children of my own, as you know." The princess continued to look at him without moving and with the same dull expression. "And then, of course, my family has also to be considered," Prince Vasily went on, testily pushing away a little table without looking at her. "You know, Katish, that we, you three sisters, Mamontov and my wife, are the Count's only direct heirs. I know how hard it is for you to talk or think of such matters. It is no easier for me, but, my dear, I am getting on for 60 and must be prepared for anything. Do you know I have sent for Pierre? The Count," pointing to his portrait, "definitely demanded that he should be called." Prince Vasily looked questioningly at the princess, but could not make out whether she was considering what he had just said or whether she was simply looking at him. "There is one thing I constantly pray God to grant, mon cousin," she replied, "and it is that he would be merciful to him and would allow his noble soul peacefully to leave this—" "Yes, yes, of course," interrupted Prince Vasily impatiently, rubbing his bald head and angrily pulling back towards him the little table that he had pushed away. "But, in short, the fact is,
You know yourself that last winter the Count made a will by which he left all his property, not to us, his direct heirs, but to Pierre.
He has made wills enough, quietly remarked the princess, but he cannot leave the estate to Pierre. Pierre is illegitimate.
But, my dear, said Prince Vasily suddenly, clutching the little table and becoming more animated and talking more rapidly, what if a letter has been written to the Emperor in which the Count asks for Pierre's legitimation? Do you understand that in consideration of the Count's services his request would be granted?
The princess smiled, as people do who think they know more about the subject under discussion than those they are talking with.
I can tell you more, continued Prince Vasily, seizing her hand. That letter was written, though it was not sent, and the Emperor knew of it. The only question is, has it been destroyed or not? If not, then as soon as all is over, and Prince Vasily sighed to imitate what he meant by the words all is over, and the Count's papers are opened, the will and letter will be delivered to the Emperor, and the petition will certainly be granted. Pierre will get everything as the legitimate son.
And our share? Asked the princess, smiling ironically, as if anything might happen, only not that.
But my poor Catiche, it is as clear as daylight. He will then be the legal heir to everything, and you won't get anything. You must know, my dear, whether the will and letter were written, and whether they have been destroyed or not. And if they have somehow been overlooked, you ought to know where they are, and must find them, because...
What next? The princess interrupted, smiling sardonically and not changing the expression of her eyes.
I am a woman, and you think we are all stupid, but I know this. An illegitimate son cannot inherit.
Un bastard, meaning a bastard, she added, as if supposing that this translation of the word would effectively prove to Prince Vasily the invalidity of his contention.
Well, really, Catiche, can't you understand? You are so intelligent. How is it you don't see that if the Count has written a letter to the Emperor, begging him to recognize Pierre as legitimate, it follows that Pierre will not be Pierre, but will become Count Bezukhov, and will then inherit everything under the will. And if the will and letter are not destroyed, then you will have nothing but the consolation of having been dutiful et tu sais quoi sensu. That's certain.
That translates to, and all that follows therefrom.
I know the will was made, but I also know that it is invalid, and you, mon cousin, seem to consider me a perfect fool, said the princess with the expression women assume when they suppose they are saying something witty and stinging.
My dear Princess Catherine Semenova, began Prince Vasily impatiently, I came here not to wrangle with you, but to talk about your interests as with a kinswoman, a good, kind, true relation. And I tell you for the 10th time that if the letter to the Emperor and the will in Pierre's favour are among the Count's papers, then, my dear girl, you and your sisters are not heiresses. If you don't believe me, then believe an expert. I have just been talking to Dmitri Onufrich, the family solicitor, and he says the same. At this, a sudden change evidently took place in the princess's ideas. Her thin lips grew white, though her eyes did not change, and her voice, when she began to speak, passed through such transitions as she herself evidently did not expect.
That would be a fine thing, said she. I never wanted anything, and I don't now.
She pushed the little dog off her lap and smoothed her dress.
And this is gratitude. This is recognition for those who have sacrificed everything for his sake, she cried. It's splendid. Fine. I don't want anything, Prince.
Yes, but you are not the only one. There are your sisters, replied Prince Vasily.
But the princess did not listen to him.
Yes, I knew it long ago, but I had forgotten. I knew that I could expect nothing but meanness, deceit, envy, intrigue, and ingratitude, the blackest ingratitude in this house.
Do you, or do you not, know where that will is? Insisted Prince Vasily, his cheeks twitching more than ever. Yes, I was a fool. I still believed in people, loved them, and sacrificed myself. But only the base, the vile, succeed. I know who has been intriguing.
The princess wished to rise, but the prince held her by the hand. She had the air of one who had suddenly lost faith in the whole human race. She gave her companion an angry glance.
There is still time, my dear. You must remember, Catiche, that it was all done casually in a moment of anger, of illness, and was afterwards forgotten. Our duty, my dear, is to rectify this mistake, to ease his last moments by not letting him commit this injustice, and not to let him die feeling that he is rendering unhappy those who
sacrifice everything for him,
chimed in the princess, who would again have risen had not the prince still held her fast.
Though he never could appreciate it. No, mon cousin, she added with a sigh, I shall always remember that in this world one must expect no reward, that in this world there is neither honour nor justice. In this world one has to be cunning and cruel.
Now, come, come, be reasonable. I know your excellent heart.
No, I have a wicked heart.
I know your heart, repeated the prince. I value your friendship and wish you to have as good opinion of me. Don't upset yourself, and let us talk sensibly while there is still time, be it a day or be it but an hour. Tell me all you know about the will, and above all where it is. You must know. And we will take it at once and show it to the Count. He has no doubt forgotten it and will wish to destroy it. You understand that my sole desire is conscientiously to carry out his wishes. That is my only reason for being here. I came simply to help him and you.
Now I see it all. I know who's been intriguing. I know, cried the princess.
That's not the point, my dear.
It's that protege of yours, that sweet Princess Drubetskaya, that Anna Mikhailovna, whom I would not take for a housemaid, the infamous, vile woman.
Do not let us lose any time.
Ah, don't talk to me. Last winter she wheedled herself in here and told the Count such vile, disgraceful things about us, especially about Sophie, I can't repeat them, that it made the Count quite ill, and he would not see us for a whole fortnight. I know it was then he wrote this vile, infamous paper, but I thought the thing was invalid.
We've got to do it at last. Why did you not tell me about it sooner?
It's in the inlaid portfolio that he keeps under his pillow, said the princess, ignoring his question.
Now I know. Yes, if I have a sin, a great sin, it is hatred of that vile woman, almost shrieked the princess, now quite changed. And what does she come worming herself in here for? But I will give her a piece of my mind. The time will come.
All right, there we go. What a chapter. The term, the plot thickens, definitely comes to mind there. You know, we've got Pierre off having this party at the Rostovs. And then, little does he know, back at the Count Bezukhov's, Vasily is hatching an evil scheme to have his inheritance swiped from under his nose. I'm sure in the film version of War and Peace, the score in the background goes dun dun dun, dramatic reverb. Another really fun scene to read. So, while Pierre's off partying, Count Bezukhov has had his sixth stroke. He's not looking good, and he's asking for Pierre. He wants Pierre there. By now it's quite clear that they're purposefully denying Count Bezukhov access to his own son, his favourite son. Not only that, we've got Prince Vasily, who's looking pretty haggard by this point. He's exhausted, but he's still working hard and he's visiting Katerina, or Katiche as he calls her, which is Pierre's cousin, the Count's niece. And he's straight up asking her, where is this note, so that he can destroy it. It seems that the Count has written a petition to the Emperor to legitimize Pierre. And if Pierre's legitimized, that means he gets the whole inheritance. He's the rightful heir to Count Bezukhov's fortune. Prince Vasily has really revealed his intentions here. He wants to find that letter and destroy it. Reddit user Glenn Borrowdale said,
This is what I've been waiting for. This chapter felt momentous. All of the facade, all of the social games that everyone has been playing so far was ripped away, and we saw what one of the characters was really like. My guess is that Vasily might win this battle, but that probably sets him up to lose the bigger war. I get the feeling the pace of the book will pick up for a while following these revelations. Another Reddit user, Libby Stitch, said, "Ooh, this was my favorite chapter so far. All the parties and teenage angst set aside for a good bit of plotting and scheming. Why would Anna Mikhailovna want to promote Pierre? I thought Pierre and Boris had only met a few chapters ago. However, it sounds like she's been pouring poison into the Count's ear regarding the sisters for some time, but we don't know if she was justified to do that yet. I imagine we'll find out the backstory in due time. Has Vasily got money troubles? Have his feckless kids got him into debt? He's desperate to get his hands on that cash, and I don't think he really gives two hoots about the princesses. I'd love to see what the Coen brothers would do with this plot. I've images of Vasily trying to steal the portfolio from under the pillow of the dying count." The Coen brothers to direct War and Peace. I'd watch it, I'm not going to lie. I would watch that, for sure. Well, it's become very clear that Vasily wants that cash. Whether it's for financial difficulties or maybe he's just greedy, just wants, you know. It is one of the biggest fortunes in Russia that Count Bezukhov has. So, you know, even for a rich person, that's still pretty tempting to get your hands on. And it is interesting now that Anna Mikhailovna is sort of Team Pierre. She actually wants Pierre to get this inheritance. Now, the one part of that comment that was, it does seem like Libby Stitch was mistaken, was about Boris and Pierre only having just met. Back in chapter 13, we learned that they'd actually met when they were boys. And although Pierre couldn't quite remember Boris, it does seem like they have a history that goes back. So they got reacquainted recently, but they didn't meet for the first time. Maybe Anna Mikhailovna sees that as enough of an in to get into Pierre's good graces. On that, another Reddit user, Shatsida, said, "Anna wants to promote Pierre because she has a better chance of manipulating him than she does Vasily or the princesses. I'm also suspicious of Vasily at this point. It's all becoming ominous between all who stand to profit except for Pierre, who's too naive to realize, seemingly, anything at all. His arc should be interesting." I think that's pretty spot on. Anna would certainly have an easier time getting money out of Pierre than he would Prince Vasily. Vasily is too slick, you know, he's going to see through her games. Whereas Pierre is a very emotional person, and he doesn't really seem like he would covet that wealth too strongly. Reddit user DFlurry said, "As someone who once did tech support, I really felt for Vasily trying to get the critical information out of that stupid woman. But I am thrilled at the idea of crazy Pierre becoming the new Count Bezukhov." Yeah, it did really take that Katish character quite a long time to cotton on. He kind of explained the same thing three or four times in a row before it kind of clicked. And it wasn't until he said something like, "The lawyers agree with me." And then she changed her tune really quickly. It really does bring out the worst in people, this inheritance business. While she thought her inheritance was safe, she continually brushed aside Vasily as if, you know, it's a silly thing to squabble about. But then as soon as the penny dropped that maybe her inheritance wasn't safe, she very quickly became quite venomous, quite spiteful. Reddit user Sonic Vroom said, "Destroying the statement that grants Pierre legitimacy in order to receive inheritance and a title by default is, by definition, greedy. But it might benefit the society. It is premature for Pierre to become a count. He is young, oblivious to the customs of Moscow, and his behavior is unacceptable for nobility. Maybe with guidance Pierre could learn, but I'd foresee disaster first. Prince Vasily is somewhat justifiable in that he and his family have been direct heirs longer and actually take care of the man. Emphasis on somewhat." Well, Sonic Vroom, that's a compelling argument. And I have the feeling that you might just be playing the devil's advocate here for the sake of the discourse, but I'd be pretty confident in saying that that's how Prince Vasily sees it. There's a line in the chapter where Vasily says something along the lines of, "We're saving the Count from a mistake that he's made." And he even implies that the Count wrote this letter to legitimize Pierre in a moment of confusion, and that now he would actually want to reverse it. He kind of tries to imply that he's trying to right a wrong for the sake of the Count. It's what the Count would want. It doesn't seem to me like that's true at all, but what isn't clear is whether or not Pierre actually believes that. You know, sometimes when people are doing something immoral and they're doing it for personal gain, they can so effectively lie to themselves to justify their actions so that they don't feel like they're doing something straight up evil. Maybe this is the case with Vasily here. Maybe he really does believe that it is for the best. In response to Sonic Vroom, Reddit user Garrock said, "I don't necessarily disagree with that argument, but that is some cold hard calculus right there. Whew, lad." Yeah, there is a seed of logic to it, I would agree. But I must say, I am still on Team Pierre. And I would like to believe that the Count Bezukhov has chosen Pierre as his favourite for good reason. He sees something in him that's worth nurturing. Garrock went on to say, "I hate the beginning of books sometimes, and only for this. I just know that stupid freaking Vasily is going to be successful, and Pierre is going to be screwed over. Because it makes for a good story for Pierre over the course of the book. But it's going to be so enraging to see, especially how he tries to soothe his own conscience and that of Princess Katerina by going on about how this is what the Count would truly want several times. No, Prince Vasily, it's not. You are just a thief." Reddit user Who Was Once Delight responded, "I am frustrated too, but I love how invested I feel in the characters." What a great chapter, and I must say I think right now is the strongest feeling of wanting to read ahead that I've had so far in this project. But alas, we will wait another day. Thank you very much for listening to this episode, and I will see you again tomorrow.